This is 67322 Dunning versus State Board of Physical Therapy. Mr. Johnson, on behalf of the appellants. If you wish to reserve some time, please so state.
Your Honors, and may it please the Court, Mr. Johnson, on behalf of the appellant, Dr. Dunning, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal. Your Honors, this Court should reverse the lower court's dismissal of Dr. Dunning's case because the policy at issue in this case is a regulation and because Dr. Dunning asked the Board of Physical Therapy Examiners to pass upon the validity of that policy. I'd like to just briefly address the second point first, which is whether Dr. Dunning asked the Board to pass upon the validity. In its answering brief, the Board does not dispute that Dr. Dunning did so ask the Board to pass upon the validity. And so it's our position that the Board has waived that argument. And unless Your Honors have further questions on that point, I'd like to focus my time on the fact that the policy is, in fact, a regulation under Nevada law.
And Judge Escobar dismissed the case because there's a lack of subject matter jurisdiction. Can you go into that as part of your analysis then? Why you feel that was error, what you did?
Sure. Judge Escobar dismissed the case pursuant to NRS 233B.110. Mm-hmm. However, she didn't explain in her order why the case was dismissed. The parties submitted competing orders to Judge Escobar. In one of them, the board's order said that she had dismissed it because the policy is not a regulation. In Dr. Dunning's order, it said that she just dismissed it pursuant to 233B.110. She decided to enter Dr. Dunning's order, and so it's not clear exactly why Judge Escobar dismissed the case other than pursuant to 233B.
Right, and that's, I think you hit the nail on the head. Mr. Dreiser can address that as well. We're just concerned when we got this to review, we didn't have the explanation with it, which we like to get, because then we can get into the judge's mind what the judge was thinking. So if both of you, we have a concern about that, so if you both can give us your thoughts on what we do today based upon that.
Yeah, so 233B.110 says that an individual can seek a declaratory judgment for a district court to review an agency action that is of general applicability and that effectuates or interprets law or policy. And in this case, the policy's action is generally applicable and it effectuates a policy of the board. And so there, 233B.110 is the very vehicle that Dr. Dunning is given under the law to challenge this action. The reason that the policy is generally applicable is because it applies to all physical therapists within the state of Nevada. It's not limited to those who take Dr. Dunning's courses. It simply says that physical therapists may not use the terms osteopractor and osteopractic in any manner, either verbal or written. And so that's the first piece of 233B.110, is that it's generally applicable. And then the second piece is that if the action effectuates a policy of the board, then it falls within 233B.110. And that is the case here because this policy draws a line between Dr. Dunning's certifications, osteopractor and osteopractic, and all of the other certifications that are used by competing businesses in the industry. The way this industry is set up is that there are many businesses who offer continuing education courses, and the board will give licensees credit for taking those courses. In fact, the board gives licensees credit for taking Dr. Dunning's courses, as well as others that are offered. But the board has now drawn this line through this policy between Dr. Dunning's certification and all of the others that are offered. And as this court noted in Chrysler in 2013, if an agency makes an action that affects multiple parties in a similar manner, then it's generally applicable. And under the plain language of 233B.110, if that action effectuates or interprets law or policy, which this action does, then it constitutes a regulation, and the board should have gone through notice and comment rulemaking procedures before adopting it. The board also argues in its papers that this is merely an interpretive ruling. It specifically points to an advertising regulation, NAC 640-630, which says that licensees may not hold themselves out as specialists unless the organization that offers that specialty is recognized by the board. I'm paraphrasing what 640-630 says, but that's the general idea.
Is there any discretion or middle ground where you can only advertise those things which have been approved by the board? Where in this case we have a subject matter that's not been approved but has not been disapproved also.
Yes, Your Honor. I believe I understand your question, and I think the text of 640-630 will answer it.
So even if we say the board acted incorrectly by improperly regulating, would it still allow this category to go forward if it had not been approved? So I guess the question really is, were they right for, was the district court right for the wrong reason, or were they just wrong?
I'm not sure I understand the basis that
I guess what I'm saying is, even if we say should sustain your position and refer it back, the question of whether or not pursuant to this category that the doctor is saying people should be able to certify themselves and advertise as, has that been allowed thus far?
Okay. I think I understand your question. 640-630 has five different subsections, and each of those subsections says a different way that a licensee may not advertise. Subsection 3 says that a licensee may not hold himself out as a specialist unless the licensee is certified as a specialist by an organization recognized by the board. To Dr. Dunning's knowledge, there is no criteria or list. So there's no list of approved organizations, and there's no criteria by which an organization can become approved. So what the board has done in this instance, even if it is interpreting 640-630, is it is drawing a line. It is essentially creating the criteria by which it is going to recognize or not recognize an organization. And that is improper, because the board should have gone through notice and comment rulemaking before coming to that conclusion. That's the very process that the public wants to weigh in on and all of the interested parties want to be a part of. And so I believe you started your question with, is there any discretion on the part of the board to make this decision? The board has discretion to make decisions, but it still needs to follow the proper procedures under the Administrative Procedure Act.
I guess the heart of the question was, in fact, this category that the doctor has so stated, or that he provides continuing education for, approved. The question, in essence, is it has not been approved by the board thus far, even before this ruling, if I understand correctly.
That is true. Okay. Well, it's hard to know, I guess, is the answer, because his continuing education courses have been approved, just like all of the other continuing education courses that are offered by his competitors who have certifications. And so because there is no list and there is no criteria, it's hard to know whether he has been approved. There is no list, though, that says these organizations are approved, and he's not on that list.
Is he required to get pre-approval of the courses before he conducts them? Or holds himself out for conducting this continuing ed?
He is required to submit an application to the board so that the board can give continuing education credits to licensees for the courses that he teaches. But none of the competing certifications have submitted an application specific to the certification itself, separate from the courses that are taught. Does that make sense?
It makes sense, because one of the questions within the question is whether or not he has in fact exhausted his administrative remedies to the board.
Yes, Your Honor, and he has exhausted his, he has done everything he's required to do. He has exhausted his administrative remedies.
Was that offered to the district court?
The fact that he has exhausted his administrative remedies? Yes, the board filed a motion to dismiss based on failure to exhaust administrative remedies, and that issue was argued below, but if the court...
How did you respond? I understand it was argued, but how did you specifically respond to that issue?
Sure. Dr. Dunning sent a letter to the board on January 30th of 2014 specifying that this was treating him unfairly. Then on March 5th, his counsel met with the board's counsel and told counsel that this was an ad hoc regulation. And then on March 20th, Dr. Dunning's counsel appeared before the board and presented a handout that specified why this is an ad hoc regulation and asked the board to withdraw it. And under 233B110, which is the statute that this case was dismissed under, the only thing that Dr. Dunning was required to do was ask the board to pass upon the validity of the policy. And he did that through those actions that I just mentioned.
The district court didn't make any findings or any order regarding the exhaustion of administrative remedies, did they?
No. No, the district court's decision is limited to dismiss pursuant to 233B110.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. The last point that I'd like to make is that the board argues that this policy is a necessary extension of that advertising regulation that I referenced. It cites two cases like Morgan, where the Committee on Benefits increased premiums and decreased benefits in order to meet its statutory mandate to keep a fund solvent. And in that instance, in the Morgan case, that decision by the board affected 20,000 people. And so the board argues similarly here that even if this is generally applicable, it necessarily follows from the advertising regulation, and therefore it's not rulemaking. But, Your Honors, that's not the case here, because in this instance, the agency's action does not necessarily follow from 640-630, because the board has drawn the line here by determining what the criteria is, who's going to be approved, who's not going to be approved, as opposed to in Morgan, where it was the statute that determined the policy of you need to keep the fund solvent. And the court noted in that case that the only way to keep the fund solvent was to increase premiums and decrease benefits, and so the agency didn't have any other choice. Thank you, Your Honors. I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Mr. Dreiser.
Good morning, Justice Douglas, Justice Cherry, Justice Gibbons, and may it please the Court. With regard to the issue that the Court brought up a moment ago as to the exhaustion of administrative remedies issue, we did not address that issue in our briefing for this Court because the issue that was framed up by the appellant was narrowly tailored to saying that that Judge Escobar made a mistake with her order. We do not waive and still stand on all the briefing below with regard to exhaustion. We believe that he has not exhausted. And to that point, just to follow it out, at the time that the board pronounced the policy, it was very clear in the minutes of the board that if Mr. Dunning wanted to come to the board and suggest a change to the policy, a change to NRS, a change to NAC, we would certainly hear him out. And all we got was a presentation about how we broke the law. We didn't get any sort of affirmative recommendation that there be a change or request for a workshop of some kind. So I believe that administrative remedy exhaustion argument is as strong as ever. So I would definitely not waive those arguments today. But with regard to the Court's first concern about Judge Escobar's ruling, there's a little more to it than what Mr. Johnson has said.
Will you just take a deep breath? We are concerned because the order really doesn't tell us why there's no subject matter jurisdiction under 233B110?
Well, maybe I can cite to the record, which might give the court a little bit of guidance. At Joint Appendix 387 through 390, in the transcript of the hearing, Judge Escobar asked each side one question. She said to both of us, can you please discuss the applicability of NRS 233B110 to your position and to Mr. Dunning's position? Our response was, we believe the policy is not a regulation, therefore that statute does not apply. Mr. Johnson responded in the opposite direction. And so when Judge Escobar's order came out saying that pursuant to NRS 233B110, I am dismissing the complaint, we think it's a logical interpretation to suggest that at the hearing she asked us, do you believe it applies? We said no. They said yes. Ultimately, she came down in our favor. So I think it's a brief minute order, but it's clear as day.
The problem, though, is that as with most arguments or debates, we have two different sides. We like the person in the middle to give us a reason why they rule for one side or the other. And that's what we seem to be lacking. So if you can explain it to us, we would appreciate that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We believe that the policy is not a regulation. We believe it is simply a clarification of the advertising rules under NAC 640.630 for this reason. We believe that the board is empowered to police the industry of physical therapy in the state of Nevada. We believe that the board is empowered to regulate advertising in terms of how people represent their professional designations to healthcare consumers and to the public at large and to each other. And so we believe it is a logical extension that where evidence is brought to the board, where practitioners, the president of the chiropractic board and others come to the physical therapy board and they say, we believe this term is confusing because it is a made-up term. It is not, there's no common agreement on what it refers to. We believe that there's a strong danger of public confusion. And so when faced with that issue of a strong danger of public confusion, the board tried to act and did what it could and enacted the policy. I also would like to address the policy itself. I think Justice Douglas hit it right on the head. We have never enacted any sort of policy prohibiting advertising before. And the reason is that there's a difference between Mr. Dunning's certifications and those that everybody else puts out there. And it's this. Mr. Dunning's certifications do not say what they mean and do not mean what they say. Osteopractic and osteopractor is effectively a contrived term. It's a trade name that he made up for purposes of selling courses. And he is asking the board to enshrine that into law and say that this is a legitimate designation. We would urge the court not to do that. Now, to be clear, we have never said that those courses lack legitimacy under our scope of practice. We have never said that licensees cannot take those courses and receive continuing education credit for them. And within the curriculum, there are subcategories for certifications in spinal manipulation therapy and other subspecialties. We have even said that if you take Mr. Dunning's course on spinal manipulation therapy as part of the osteopractic curriculum, we will allow you to use that designation as your professional designation because there's common agreement on what that refers to. With, for example, certification in spinal manipulation therapy, CSMT, you can go to Google, you can call the American Physical Therapy Association, you can get some sort of guidance as to what that refers to, and everyone agrees. There is no agreement on what osteopractor and osteopractic refer to because Mr. Dunning owns the term. He's trademarked it. And so if he decides one day he wants to take a course out and put a new one in or modify what that curriculum consists of, he's within his rights to do it. And if we have enshrined that into law, we have to accept that change. And that's a very dangerous precedent to set. We believe that if we allow people to self-define certifications that we must accept as a board, it creates a race to the bottom. Because the next person that comes along who wants to gain a competitive advantage in the market could take Mr. Dunning's courses, add one, and want to refer to themselves as a super osteopractor. And then they come back to us, and then we have to acknowledge that one too. And before you know it, you have this crazy quilt of different certifications where everyone is, you know, self-defining what their certifications are, and we're stuck. And our concern is that consumers will have to go to those people to get definitions of what they refer to because there's no common industry agreement on what that refers to. And that's really dangerous. As an analogy, I would suggest that as a member of the bar, if I wanted to refer to myself as an elite lawyer, I may be able to use that as a trade name, but I cannot go to the state bar and say, I demand to refer to myself as Richard Dreitzer, Esquire, elite lawyer. I think Mr. Hundred from the Bar Council and this court might have something to say about that. So it's the same situation here. We have a real problem with people being able to self-define, and we think that's a very dangerous precedent to set. Another point is, in the hearing before Judge Escobar, before she broke, before she issued her ruling, before she while she was taking testimony or taking argument from counsel, she asked a question to Mr. Johnson on the record, and this is the Joint Appeal 407. She said, Mr. Johnson, are these terms nationally, are they used nationally aside from your client? And Mr. Johnson responded, in the physical therapy industry, companies create their own certifications. So my client uses the certification nationally, and licensees of the states are all working towards this certification. So the answer to the question is no. The judge asked him, or is there common agreement about what they refer to? And he said no. And so, you know, they can package it any way they want, but at the end of the day, there is all the common acronyms that that Mr. Dunning refers to in his briefing. He claims special treatment because he's been singled out, because other members of the board use certifications after their name. Every single one of those has been a certification upon which there is common agreement. Mr. Dunning is the first one that's ever come to the board's attention where there has been public confusion. And so we believe if the statute gives the physical therapy board the power to regulate advertising in the state of Nevada, the power to discipline people, the power to control the industry, we also have the power to decide what advertising is acceptable and what advertising is not acceptable. And they've also raised the argument about that if a policy impacts anyone other than the people in front of the court at the moment, it is a policy of general applicability, and therefore it's a regulation. The Morgan case that Mr. Johnson cited, that referenced 20,000 people. But because the nature of the action taken was simply that board doing what it was charged with doing, which is regulating benefits in the state of Nevada, that was deemed to be an appropriate use of that board's authority, which did not require administrative rulemaking procedures be followed. The other point I'd like to make is when we've given Mr. Dunning a number of opportunities to come before the board and to provide evidence of proof that the certification is legitimate, to give us scientific proof or to give us testimony from someone to suggest that this is a policy, that this is a certification which should be recognized by the board. What they did was they came to us on March 20th of 2014 and instead read us the Riot Act about how we were breaking the law and gave us no evidence about the legitimacy of the term. And nowhere in the record, whether below before Judge Escobar or before this court, is there any evidence of legitimacy of the term. So their argument today is largely a form over substance argument. Rather than saying affirmatively, we believe this is worthy of certification, they're picking apart our decision making and saying that we should have cited a particular statute at the time we issued the policy. And I'm not aware of any authority which stands for the proposition that for a board to exercise its authority, it has to cite a particular statute at every stage of its citation.
Before you get into your final remarks and your remaining time, I guess I'm still bothered, and maybe you can shed some light, and whether or not on the record, in her conclusions or whatever, Judge Escobar told you why she was ruling in the manner she was ruling in, because the order just simply states, further, whether the board's motion to dismiss plaintiff's complaint for declaratory injunctive relief is granted pursuant to NRS 233B110, but it doesn't tell us what you've been telling us. You've made argument about policy versus regulation, things of that nature. Did she articulate on the record why she was doing it, or that she found these facts something we can go back and look at to hang our hat?
Understood. Justice Douglas, other than the citation that I mentioned at the top of my remarks where she asked us the question about the applicability of 233B110, and also the question she asked Mr. Johnson about whether it's a nationally approved term, that is the only insight we have into the judge's ruling as she did. But because it's the only insight that we have, we believe that question that she asked about the applicability of that statute, considering the way it was answered and then the way the ruling came down, is pretty clear that she found in our favor, and that she concluded that it was not a regulation. That is that the nature of her questioning and the nature of the order as it came down would make that suggestion. I should also add, counsel brought up the fact that we submitted competing orders, and then Judge Escobar chose not to adopt the board's order. Well, we don't have any guidance from Judge Escobar as to the reason she rejected our particular order. There were a number of deviations from the minute order that she imposed to the order that we suggested, and we have no guidance to say, well, this was the reason for the rejection versus that was the reason for the rejection. We can't say that. But I do believe that the record is clear when she asked us, do you believe that statute applies, and our responses yielded
her. Well, that's our concern about the record being clear. It's something that we brought up recently to attorneys and judges. It's like grading homework. We want to see the work product to get to the answer. And the questions are raised, and statements are argued on both sides, whatever value is given. But we don't know what value each part was given, because all we have is a final. We're missing the in-between, and that's what I'm trying to get to. And so I guess if you had to write the order, how would you write the order to sustain your position this day?
I'm sorry?
If you had to write the order to sustain your position, how would you write it in terms of the record?
I would suggest that the Ogawa case that we cited talks about that where a court determines facts for jurisdictional purposes, that determination is entitled to deference. And we believe that given this, albeit paltry,
can you
where the
point to facts that were determined on the record to get to the answer?
I come back to the question that the judge asked about the applicability of 233B110, and also the question that she asked Mr. Johnson about whether that is a nationally accepted term. I think when you put all that together, you can see that the judge was concluding that there was legitimacy to what the board did. If there was not that question in the record, I think we would be at sea. It would be a very difficult argument for either side to make about what the judge was thinking. But when you have that exchange, I think it's pretty clear, and given the cases that talk about the deference that those decisions are entitled to, I think it's not an ideal order. I think counsel and I both agree on that, but I do think it's clear that that the judge found in our favor because she concluded it was not a regulation. And also, I would, if I could, just to sum up, We are not trying to discriminate or to make it harder for Mr. Dunning to do his business or to operate in the state of Nevada. All we are trying to do is to keep terms about which there is no common agreement from being used in common circulation and presenting a danger of confusion to the public. And we acted in that spirit. This is not an attempt to limit his ability to earn a living. Quite the contrary. We've approved his courses at every turn. We believe his courses are part of our scope of practice. And so we believe the record is sufficient to justify our upholding the judge's ruling, because the policy is not a regulation in this matter.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Johnson?
Just two brief points in rebuttal, Your Honors. First, it is not clear from the district court's order that she found that this policy is not a regulation. In fact, I think the most convincing fact to that point is that the board submitted a proposed order in which it said, and I'm paraphrasing, but this is in the record, that the court was dismissing this case because the policy is not a regulation, and the court decided not to enter that order. My second point, Your Honors, is that counsel for the board talks about how there are various opinions on what Dr. Dunning's terms osteopractor and osteopractic do and don't mean, and how they may or may not be the same as other certifications used in the industry. And it is because there are many different people who have opinions, who want to weigh in on this topic, that the board should go through rulemaking. That's the very reason that 233B038 says that if an agency takes an action that is generally applicable and it effectuates a policy of the agency, then the agency needs to go through rulemaking so that all of the interested parties can have their due process rights and can weigh in on the topic. If there are no further questions, Your Honor, I'm finished.
That last statement just takes me back to a position Mr. Dreitzer said. And he said the policy of the board in terms of the advertising was to make sure that terms of art that are commonly used are used, and other terms that aren't commonly used or have multiple understanding are not used. So why couldn't this be deemed a policy determination opposed to a regulation?
Yes, Your Honor, because Section 3 of 640-630 says if you're a physical therapist, you can't hold yourself out as a specialist unless you're recognized by the board. But the board has never gone through rulemaking to figure out what the criteria is to be recognized by the board. So if the board skips that step by jumping straight from a regulation that says you can't hold yourself out unless you're recognized and then comes to a conclusion that someone's not recognized, then they have skipped the very policy that they are trying to interpret. And NRS 233B038 says if you're going to effectuate policy and it's going to be generally applicable, you need to go through rulemaking. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Thank both counsel for their arguments today, shedding light on questions we have in light of the decision of the district court. With that, this matter will stand submitted. Thank you very much.